Brisbane Bulldogs. A lifetime of heartache and the drought is over at the MCG.
Stride for stride in the Melbourne Cup. Al Mandon, Heartbreak City. Al Mandon's won the cup.
Cahill, Tip Cahill!
Hello, Plough. How are you?
Hello, Rowan. How are you going?
Very well.
How's your work levels been over the weekend?
Fairly constant. I actually haven't had much of an Easter, but it's all been good fun. Love doing the radio stuff. Love doing newspaper stuff sometimes. Tuned out the Monday column all day yesterday. It's always a big day, but I am looking forward to a little bit of downtime this afternoon. What about you?
Well, a bit the same. It sort of seems like this 2 weeks... We sort of need to get to Anzac Day to actually get through it all. So,
well, it has
been stretched out, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And the Anzac Day round is... Well, this round's been over, 5 days? Anzac Day round, is that over 5 days as well? Yeah, it is. Friday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Footy never sleeps, does
with
it?
A Monday night game sort of thrown
Anzac
in there.
Day Eve. Yeah. Is that actually an official occasion, Anzac Day Eve? Well, it's become one, hasn't it? But that is a good game, the Richmond-Melbourne game. It's sort of
a very important game.
Yeah.
We've got a pretty important game today. As well, haven't we?
We have. Well, look.
What do you think happens?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Hawthorn really got themselves up for it. But really, if you look at it, strip the emotion away, it's hard to argue a case for them winning at the moment, isn't it?
It is. I think they'll be in front halfway through the second quarter, and then to me, it'll be how far in front and can they hold on? Because you go back only a couple of weeks ago, we're all raving about where Adelaide are at the moment, and. Go back a couple of weeks ago only, there were 6-2 at quarter time.
Yes,
Hawthorn were in front of them.
I did that game, yeah.
Yeah, so I still think that at home they'll come out and they'll hit hard. What impact that has and whether they've got the legs to continue to run it out, that'll be sort of something that'll play itself out. But I think it'll be still a good game.
I've written today, it's sort of their moment of truth. I know they've had some big moments, but in terms of the bigger picture, they even if they don't win, they have to make some sort of statement. They can't come out and play like last week. I don't know what you think. I did a bit of stats trawling yesterday, and one thing that really intrigued me, look, their kicking efficiency's down, we know that. They've almost been forced into playing a game that they're not suited to play. But just in terms of effort and pressure... Tackling right down, and I think those sort of harder ball indicators, guys who are really down on the tackle count, Cyril Rioli and Sean Burgoyne, and they're two of their absolute keys.
Well, that's a disappointment from their point of view because, to me, Hawthorn's style of play has been almost sweat on the opposition, allow them to get first use, put so much pressure on them that they cough it up and then we go in counter-attack from there. But they're losing the contested possession, but they're not, their tackle count's not up either. So you can't have both. I mean, if you're going to play that style, and we all heard about that, only getting the 3 free kicks in last year's finals campaign against the Bulldogs. But if you're going to play that style, it's got to be enormous tackle pressure or it's going to fall apart.
Well, actually, interestingly, I guess the other way you can pressure a ball carrier is corralling them without necessarily tackling them. Do Hawthorn do that well enough?
Well, not now, not at the moment. I mean, look, they're not doing most things well enough as we sort of speak. But it still shows again, I think, that when you put 7 or 8 blokes into a side, it's not only who's coming out, so it's not only personnel driven, because some of those guys that they put in, I know Amira's not going to be there today, but his numbers have looked all right, Mitchell's numbers have looked all right, but it's a bloke standing in the right positions, are your structures in place the way that you expect them to be in place, and you've got senior leaders that are going, why have we got a hole there? We shouldn't have a hole there, where the guys who were there in the past had just been more regimented and more drilled. You've got new blokes in. It takes time.
We probably underestimate that as a factor, don't we? I know Clarko mentioned that even after the first game when they lost to Essendon. But also just that, I guess, a small degree of drop-off with efficiency. A la Mitchell and O'Meara, their numbers have been good. But I remember after the first couple of games comparing their efficiency with, say, Sam Mitchell and Jordan Lewis, and they're just that little bit below, aren't they?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So, look, that'll be interesting. Look, we're here to talk all things footy. So, if anyone wants to jump on the lines and ring us about any matters, we'll cover our own topics along the hour anyway. But certainly, we're here to talk all things. One thing I did want to ask you, just in relation to coaches who might be coaching okay but losing, how accepting are supporters of the loss? But if the coaches are going okay, and I'll give you two straight away. I think Brad Scott is coaching really well.
Yep.
With what he's got, with the tools that he's got, I think that he's coaching really well. But they're not getting results.
Yeah.
And how frustrating is that for North supporters? Do they accept, because he's been there a while now as well, do they accept that he's coaching well, or do they just see the loss?
It's a good question. You know what the harder one to judge is? When a coach is getting wins but coaching like crap. Because I reckon that's a harder one for the pundits or anyone really to pick up.
Because you sit there, I'd use Luke Beveridge at the moment. They're just going, the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's coaching like...
No, I was going to say, I could throw you under the bus.
All I'm sort of suggesting is getting out of jail and winning ugly, but you're still winning, and you're still likely to play finals because you're doing that.
Yeah.
Is that what you should be concentrating on, or is it that, hang on, the form is not where it needs to be?
And then with a team like them, the question then becomes, okay, if they aren't performing at their best, to what extent is that coaching? To what extent is that the motivation levels of
correct.
The players?
Correct.
And then, even if you sort of work that out, to what extent is the coach responsible for those motivation levels?
Absolutely. So there's so many layers in all that, isn't there? The other guy I just wanted to mention as well was, I think, Brennan Bolton is coaching well. You go and ask the Melbourne Footy Club when they played them at the MCG how difficult it was to break down what they were doing and break down their press. Go and ask Rodney Eade. I was there on Saturday night at Etihad Stadium. They really struggled. They were going sideways, backwards, trying to get through. Yes, eventually they broke it because this is a young team that can't do it for four quarters yet. So
I think he won the coaching battle against John Worsfold too. The spare man in defence really caught
Doherty. Yeah.
Actually, while we're talking about that, why didn't Essendon respond to that?
I have
that?
No idea.
Okay.
No, I didn't think they did. I thought they had a really bad game, that wet weather game, Essendon in general, in the coach's box.
Yeah.
And really wanting to compete, and do the tough things on the ground. I just thought they were off.
Actually, just to your point about drilling and the difference that makes, I was talking to someone about why Essendon continued to play a dry weather sort of game in those conditions. And I was saying, well, wasn't Worsfold telling him? And he said, he was. But the players do practice a set method of play so often over the preseason that just instinctively they can't make themselves switch off that quickly. We've got plenty of calls coming through to talk to Terry. Get on the line, 9429 1116. You can SMS 0433 98 1116. Let's head out to South Melbourne. It's the Gov. Good day, Gov.
Good morning, Roko. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good, Gov.
I have a question for you about the Cats. And over the past 2 weeks during the North Melbourne game and Melbourne game, I've been very observant in the manner of leaking goals from offensive and defensive stoppages during the state of play. Even though we've won two games and got out of jail against North Melbourne and just got out of jail against Melbourne, we seem to be leaking goals from the stoppages, because the old Greg Geelong side weren't leaking goals from the stoppages. They knew where to stand and where to guard the space. This Geelong team seems to be too offensive, but they don't know how to guard the areas within the zone. I just want to know, since the footballers are professional footballers, shouldn't they be actually rehearsing stoppage scenario A, B, C, and D to get it down to second nature?
Well, they do. Well, the answer is that they do, but when you say second nature, sometimes second nature is see ball, go ball, go and get it. I've always thought Paddy Dangerfield's a superstar. I think he's the best player in the competition still as we stand. So put that on one side, but he is very, very offensive around stoppage.
Yeah.
And I go back to his Adelaide days. Yeah, he just sees it, and let's call it a centre bounce. Just so you've got a spot. Normally what you would have to say in a centre bounce situation is, my role is to cover one side of that centre square area. So my role is to hold and make sure that the ball is not coming out that side unless it's coming through me. Dangerfield doesn't do that.
Mm.
He sees it and he goes and attacks the footy. And that's what makes him such a great player.
Well, don't people say this about Gary Ablett as well? If there's a chink in Ablett's armour, it's his defensive midfield work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And most of, to be honest, most of the great stars of the past have been that way. I played on Diesel a fair bit. Diesel didn't worry about anyone else because he just went, well, even if you get the equivalent 30 possessions, or I get 30 possessions, my 30 are going to be more pure and clean than what your 30 are ever going to be. So
who's a good example in the AFL right now of a more defensive midfielder?
Rory Sloane.
Yeah?
Yeah, does it both ways.
Yeah.
Really does it both ways. Yeah, he's very, very much. Oh, and Libba would be another one that I would put up there straight away. Yeah, they can win their own footy, go and get first use of the footy, but they tackle, they pressure, hold ground when it needs to be held ground. So they would be two that I'd push straight up there.
Interesting. Let's head out to Pakenham. Jack. Hi, Jack.
How are you guys?
Good.
There's been a lot of talk about Harry Taylor moving forward and how it hasn't worked. I think there's another case, and that's Cale Hooker at Essendon. I watched Saturday night and Taylor Walker just taking Paddy Ambrose apart, and they've got Hooker and Hurley in the team, and Hooker can't get near it. He can't even compete as a centre-half forward. I can't believe they don't put him back and put Aaron Francis, the young gun from the twos. I can't believe he's not getting an opportunity.
I reckon there's a chance that might even happen this week. I think Francis was reasonably close last week. This is a perennial debate when defenders go forward, isn't it, player?
It is.
When it works initially, and it did for half a season with Hooker, everyone goes, great. And then when it stuffs up, they start going, well, he's not a natural forward. And people say that about Hurley as well. So,
well, it's your footy team.
Mm.
I thought he was okay in the first couple of weeks. You know, I go back to the Brisbane game.
Yeah.
I thought he was actually going all right. And I had a couple of calls last week on exactly this same situation.
Yeah.
So I said, well, hang on. You can't throw it all out because of the wet game at the MCG. But then we've now got another week where it hasn't worked
well,
again.
Well, that's my point, I suppose. I think when you're a defender turned forward, people are less forgiving of a bad game. So maybe a more natural forward gets, you know, three bad games before the critics start, vultures start circling. With a defender turned forward, it might be one or two. It's an interesting dilemma for them, and I think that's what it's nice to have flexibility. But at the end of the day, are you better off with a permanent key forward?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, everyone tries to fix things up over the summer. So what you do is you do all your analysis. And you sit there and go, well, what do we need to do better? From an Essendon point of view, I would have thought that they sort of would have sat back and gone, we can't score. We just can't score enough.
Yeah.
So therefore, that's what they've tried to do. So we think we'll be able to hold up at the other end.
Yeah.
So we need to put more scoring power in. And so that's the theory behind why they've done it. With Geelong's, it was we are getting enormous amount of inside 50s, but our conversion rate, once it's inside 50, is poor. We've got to get somebody down there to help out in that, and so therefore Harry Taylor goes down the other end. But then, does that mean, and when you have a look at them at the moment, they're the most efficient side, along with Adelaide, scoring-wise, the most efficient side, even though Harry's not doing a necessarily good job. But they are leaking goals the other way because Harry's not at
half-back. Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Correct. So, but that's the analysis that's done. You try to fix the problem. It might sometimes, like our rules, one problem might create two or three more.
The law of unintended consequence. We'll take one more call before we get to a break. Box Hill, Norm. Hi, Norm.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
Very well.
Good, Norm.
Look, I'm a Carlton supporter, and I walked away from the game on Saturday night with a big grin on my face. I think we've got the best list of kids that I can remember we've ever had. And when you watch them play, you can see that they're giving 100%. They seem to know what they're trying to do, where they're trying to get to. They've got good direction out there. I think Daisy Thomas is directing them pretty well. I know his kicking's letting him down and his pace has dropped a bit, but I think he's still an asset to the side. But I just look at it and I think we're really heading in the right direction. We've got some good young kids. It's just that their bodies aren't seasoned and they're running out of puff as the game wears on, and that's just all that's letting them down. And when they get a couple of seasons in them, they're going to be a pretty formidable side, I think.
I like what I'm seeing from them. I think that their key backs will be good. It'll take some time. I mean, obviously, they're still using Sam Rowe down there as the bigger body to try to assist. But you know, I think Marchbank will be a good player for them. I think McCready will be a good player for him. He got hurt on Saturday night, so he's playing a bit injured.
Had a bit of a clanger too, didn't he?
Oh, that was a shocker. I think some of the young boys, Williamson, Fisher, had his debut game. I thought he was terrific in debut. I think that those young speedsters will be good, and that's obviously Pickett and Petreski Seaton. So there's some good signs there. And as I said before, I thought the manner in which they played was really good. I mean, their press was outstanding early. Mm. It's just that their kids...
Sustaining it.
Correct.
Yeah, and that only comes with experience. You can't expedite that process,
well,
can you?
I always sort of say about kids, watch for the four or five things they do in a game, and hopefully within another 50 games, that four or five will be 15 or 16 things in a game. Well, it's the same with the whole team, with that, you know, the press and things like that. Well, if you can do it for a half, maybe in 50 or 60 games, they'll be doing it for a full game.
Which is why when you do, and I'm cursing myself as I say this, when you do your pre-season ladder, you should really be looking at the possible improvement from those guys who played three, four seasons.
Yeah, growth.
But you often take your eye off them because they've been in the system a while and you think, oh, yeah, I know about him. You get too obsessed with the immediate ins and outs and not worried about enough about the improvement from within.
Well, that's where Adelaide's improved.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's that sort of, let's call it second and third tier players. Yeah. They've stepped up.
And we'll talk about them after the break too. Can they sustain the style of footy we're playing? And we should. I can see all those Richmond fans out there thinking, why aren't you talking about us? We're going to talk about the Tigers, because they've done really well so far. Terry Wallace here for the Lobster Cave. You're looking for an extraordinary dining experience. You can't go past Billy Ferg's famous Lobster Cave. I've been there. It's terrific. 18 North Concourse in Beaumaris. Check out the famous Ferg Burger at lobstercave.com.au, or to book your table today, call 9589 6329.
On 11:16 SEN, mornings with Rowan Connolly. For iPrimus, unlimited broadband and NBN plans for all of us. Call 131 101. And Mercedes-Benz Brighton. Think Mercedes-Benz, think Mercedes-Benz Brighton.
Just thought I'd give that a spin for you, Plough. That is, in my opinion, the greatest cover version ever.
What is it? Come on.
It's 8 Miles High, originally by the Birds, but sung by Husker Du.
Sung by who?
Husker Du.
Oh, very good.
A seminal punk band from Minnesota of the 70s
and 80s. I have been listening to your music all morning,
yeah,
Rowan.
You wouldn't mind a bit of it, would you? You'd like the Angels, wouldn't you?
I like the Angels. Yeah. I'd like to come around one day and have a listen to a bit, because I don't know it.
Yeah.
I legitimately don't know it.
I'm happy to educate you anytime. I know. No, look, I'd put your musical taste certainly superior to others of your era I've come across. I know why I'm saying your era, because it's my era as well. I'm only a few years younger than you. Anyway, enough music talk. We're talking footy on Weekend Siren with Terry Wallace. Heap of calls. Just before we go to them, though, Plough, I reckon we should talk about the Tigers. I reckon they've earned their moment in the sun. It's been a really good effort so far. What do you think's been the key to it?
I think there's a lot of keys to it. I mean, where do you start? Do you start with personnel changes within the football club?
Yeah.
Whether they be coaching.
Yeah.
You know, Barmy obviously coming in. So there's been some significant changes there.
Yeah.
There's been significant changes to the playing personnel. You know, going out and getting players that could impact straight away, and that was around the ball. So obviously Prestia, Caddy, Nankervis, who's been very, very good for them. So that changed the look of things.
Well, just on that, that's had a flow-on effect too, hasn't it? Because Prestia and Caddy equals more time forward for Dusty Martin.
Correct.
But even Trent Cotchin.
Spot on.
And then two more who Tiger fans are a wrap for them, but they're still sort of slipping under the guard a little bit. The two small forwards,
well,
Dan Butler and Jason Castagna.
Well, and Castagna last night was terrific, absolutely terrific. Look, and that was the next layer, that all of a sudden they put some kids in, put some excitement, put some more defensive pressure into the lineup. But one of the things that I think's got lost a little bit, it's funny how things work at times, isn't it? We had, before the start of the season, we had Damien Hardwick come out and sort of say, you know, what did he learn from his studies overseas? I'm just going to let the boys play, you know, free them up. In the last couple of weeks, we've had Ross Lyon. I'm going to free them up, just let them, you know, play, be a little bit more offensive in nature. We're going to coach our team rather than worrying so much about what the opposition sides are doing.
Can I just ask you there, for having been in that position yourself, both those cases, and I'd say particularly Ross at Frio, some of us have looked at those situations for 2 years and screamed exactly that. And it doesn't, it's not, you say, well, it's not rocket science. Why is it harder for someone in that position to see it?
Because when you are
under, you want to control everything you can?
When you're under pressure, you think at times that you need to coach and coach and coach.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to do my job,
yeah,
and my job is to be across everything and make sure that everything is in its right spot.
Where, in fact, less could actually be more.
Correct, because sometimes you're putting a lid on the players. Look, I'll ask you a question, because I know you wrote an article of recent times about the Tigers and their ball movement,
yeah,
and the fact that it's superior. Your article was spot on, and watching last night, and I don't know how many people, because it was a bit off Broadway, most people watched most of the Collingwood St Kilda game.
Yeah.
Watching the game last night, got to half time, and I just had a look at some of the numbers. At halftime, the score was 69-27. So the game was in the Tigers' control at that stage. They'd had 31 inside 50. So, yeah, they're tracking along at a nice rate. Ball movement's good enough that you're going to get the ball in 60 times, which is a good result. Inside 50, they'll go into 68% effectiveness, which is enormous. And I sort of sat back and went and had a look at the numbers. How many do you think would have been the most possessions for a Richmond player at half-time in a game?
Well, you think one of the on-ballers, and you'd think, based on those scores and those entries, I would have thought at least sort of low 20s.
Yeah, well, and that's what would be normal for
I'm
a game.
I'm tipping I'm wrong in saying that.
Well, I mean, I didn't expect you to know the
answer.
But what you were saying with your article on the ball movement, David Asprey had the most possessions.
David Asprey
had the most possessions at halftime of any Richmond player.
And how many?
12.
Oh, what?
12.
So how many total disposals had the team had at halftime?
Yeah, I've got that number down here, 173.
That's low today.
Yeah. So what it says is their ball movement's pure. What Damien Hardwick said was, we're going to play. We're just going to play. We're going to play with a bit of freedom.
Go back
to last year. Sorry, just interrupt for 1 second. Go back to last year. As good as what Dustin Martin was last year, how many times did we see him winning the ball at half back and kicking sideways, kicking on the horizontal? How many times did we see Trent Cotchin, short chip kick, and then run around the back and get back off that direct opponent, direct player, teammate? That's not happening at all.
No.
It's get it, let's go forward, and let's go forward with run and carry and ball movement.
Off half back.
Their ball movement is so much better this year.
But it also backs up what Hardwick's saying, isn't it? Like, let them play, because in being more direct and being prepared to kick down the line more rather than chip it or always looking for the free man, they're backing their own ability to win a contest, aren't they? They
Absolutely.
Haven't had enough faith in their ability to win the contest.
Absolutely. And you know, they've added blokes, as we just said, who are capable of winning more contested ball, and they're quicker with what they're doing as well. So, you know, look, it's working very, very well.
Incidentally, I blame you for the birth of that uncontested game, and we talked about it the other day, 2006 versus Adelaide at Etihad Stadium.
That was a very unusual game.
Infamous game of football. I did have the stats handy. I don't have them in front of me, but Joel Bowden took something like 22 uncontested marks, and there was some other incredible stat. I think you guys usually averaged 80 short kicks per game, and that day it was 180 or something.
I think it was Sheeds who sort of said, don't give me that basketball crap. And what actually happened, we lost by 117 points the week before
to Sydney. Yeah.
Adelaide were actually on top of Sydney. Adelaide were the top side in the competition, but they played a zoning style of play where they held their half backs back almost inside forward 50 and then catapulted from there.
Yeah.
And we sort of said, you know, let's call it in basketball mode, we sort of said, well, if the zone is going to stay back as a zone, we're just going to kick it around the edges until they come out and come and chase us. And they didn't come out.
No, no.
It was, so we just didn't give it, back.
What do you call it? Is it a Mexican standoff?
Correct.
But of course, the breaks came off at the end and they ended up, they kicked four in a few minutes and it was bizarre going footy. I seem to always be there when those bizarre games are played. And you seem a common denominator. Of course, we won't talk about the Western Bulldogs and Essendon. That was another bizarre one.
It was your history.
Yeah,
we were just part of it.
All right. Sorry to keep you waiting, Carlos. Thanks for hanging on. Let's head out to Wheelers Hill and Russell.
Good morning, Rowan and Terry.
Hi, Russ.
I wanted to talk, not related to the actual games, but I'm not a happy camper at the moment. I'm not in a position to subscribe to Foxtel, and my team rarely gets on free-to-air, being an interstate team. And I've, last year or so, watched it, the AFL app, and I've watched it on a tablet, or I then woke up to Chromecasting it to my TV, which I know the league don't like you to do. But this year, they've restricted how you can watch it, the AFL app. They started off putting the screen on a tablet very small.
Mm.
I've noticed as of this weekend, you can't do it at all on a tablet and you can't Chromecast it. All you can do now is watch it on a little 2x1 telephone screen. Now, last night my son and I are, you know, sitting over this little telephone trying to watch a game. I think it's reprehensible what they're doing. Not everyone's in a situation to subscribe, you know, $1,000 a year for Foxtel. My wife would kill me if I thought I'd do that. I think it's just money grubbing and it's a game killer. I just think it's morally wrong what they're doing. And they should open the game up to a lot more people, or people will just lose interest.
So, yeah, that's interesting, because I had heard a lot of complaints about the AFL app in various forms. You know, some people think it's a lot less user-friendly. The stuff about the size of the picture on the tablet was getting a big... So it's actually not available now on tablet at all?
It just came up. I was getting a message on the weekend saying you could not watch this on an external device. Now, I'm not quite sure what that meant.
Mm.
It couldn't Chromecast it from my phone either. And Chromecasting, it's okay. The quality's dodgy, but at least you could watch it.
So just for the lay people, and in fact me,
I'm putting my hand up.
That's just, is that basically sort of running a HDMI cable sort of thing into your TV so you watch that picture on the TV?
You buy a little device.
Yeah.
$50, call a Google Chromecast, plug it into your HDMI, and you cast the screen of your phone to that, and it comes up on your TV. I mean, it's not great quality, but you could watch it. But they obviously don't like you doing that, and they've now blocked that. And you also you could at least watch it on a tablet on a lot smaller screen. But certainly, my experience this weekend, I'm not sure everyone else had it, but I couldn't even watch it on a tablet, so we had to hunch over the little mobile phone screen.
Yeah, no, that's not ideal. Look, thanks for bringing that to our attention, Russell. We might chase that up, because I suspect if you're saying that, a lot of people will be similarly dissatisfied and surprised to attempt to watch a game on tablet and find all of a sudden, halfway through a season, they can't do that anymore. Look, still got plenty of calls on the line. Chris, Paul, Daniel, Mark, Mel, Stephen, you've been hanging on for ages. Stick with us. We will get to your calls. Terry Wallace is here for Eco Garage Doors. He's here for everyone. The latest range of garage doors to choose from. To get your free quote, call 9703 1500. To see the exclusive garage door profiles and super smoother motors, visit ecogaragedoors.com.au. It's 19 minutes to midday here on 1116 SEN.
On 1116 SEN, mornings with Rowan Connolly. For iPrimus, unlimited broadband and NBN plans for all of us. Call 131 101 and Mercedes-Benz Brighton. Think Mercedes-Benz, think Mercedes-Benz Brighton.
Bit of Guerrilla Radio from Rage Against the Machine. We're going to do some Guerrilla talk back now, because we've got a stack of calls.
That'll be a shock, an hour with Rage Against
the
Machine.
Actually, the first grab I've played the entire morning, Flair.
That would be a great shock.
I cannot get through a day without my dose of Rage Against the Machine. Let's go to Essendon and Chris. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen. Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Like, love the lead-in with the Alice in Chains there, Roko.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Just, I was at the game on Friday night with the Jack Zeeble and Trav Cloak bump. I'm a Mad Dog supporter. I was right in front of me, mate, and nothing wrong with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Jack's a tough, hard player, so is Trav. He's cleaned up a few in his time, and he got him fair and square in the sweet spot, mate. Nothing wrong with that at all. What's your thoughts?
Player? Well, that's I've already given mine.
Yeah, like that's how my take on it is that I would be really disappointed if he went out. We have a contact sport. I know that there was a lot of passion in one of the earlier hours that you did this morning with people who believe, you know, he was unprotected at the time. It's a tough game. It's a brutal game. You're going to get injuries. I thought it was a 50-metre penalty. I thought you could have, you know, gone to that level, but I didn't think it was any more than that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the majority view. I mean, based on the feedback we've got today and what I've seen on social media and whatever, I'd say it's about 80 saying he should get off, about 20 saying he shouldn't.
I'd be disappointed if he went for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been the big one that he had a couple of seasons ago. I was on the other side of the fence. I actually thought he should have gone, you know, when that one where he jumped through the air.
Oh, yeah. Was it, I don't know why I'm thinking, Aaron Joseph?
Yeah, I can't recall. Gee, who was involved.
It's a fair while ago. It's about 2012.
Yeah, but it was, I thought he
launched into the air.
He launched into the air, and that's where he lost his any chance of getting away with that one. This one, I thought, contact to the body.
Yeah.
Yes, he did damage. There's been a lot of blokes that have got broken ribs over a period of time playing footy.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, let's go to Mount Eliza, and I think is it Paul? Hi, Paul. You there, Paul? No, Paul. Okay, let's go to Heatherton and Daniel, who wants to talk about Eddie Betts. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Good.
I heard you talking about forwards that didn't work with hooker and structures and things like that, and I'm a Brisbane supporter. Is Eddie Betts probably the best fundamental forward or fundamental player of the last 10 years? The way he gets front and centre of nearly every pack, the way that he sets himself up, everything he does is just fundamentally perfect. And I reckon that him and Taylor Walker are probably the best forward duo of the last five years.
He's become a sensational player, hasn't he? It's just quite remarkable that where he was at. I mean, he was a good player at Carlton.
Carlton can't have known he was this good, because if they did, there's no way they wouldn't have found the extra $40,000.
Yeah, it's remarkable what he's done. I'm actually looking forward for a game that will be a little bit off-Broadway again. I'm actually looking forward to seeing him play the Gold Coast, because Jared Harbrow normally plays on him and has actually had a reasonable record on him over a period of time. And they're both excitement machines in their own sort of way. So I'm looking forward to that actually.
Does Harbrow lock down on him or still play off him?
Still plays off him, which is strange. I think it's an enormous risk. I think the guy that's probably in my time had the best record on him has been Ben Stratton. He's taken him like as that taller option, so he's been able to bring the ball to ground, and then they've had numbers get to the contest. They just haven't given him as much space, but he's been able to handle him in the air and sort of at ground level.
Yeah, it certainly takes a very special type of opponent, no doubt about that. Let's go to Mark, who's on the road. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, Plough, spoke to you last week about the Tigers, and look, we're 4-0, and, you know, it's a great start to the season. Very happy with it. I love your thoughts and agree with you totally about how Richmond this year, they're playing daring football, Terry. That's what I like. Last year, they were very defensive, very high possession, chipping back, chipping across. But this year, they just seem to be playing with a lot of dare. Do you think that's play? I really think that it's really exciting and enjoyable football to watch.
I've enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed the way that they're playing and their style of play. As I mentioned before, you know, Fremantle over the last couple of weeks or so, I thought that was a really good game on Saturday, the Fremantle game.
Oh, it's good to watch.
Fremantle-Melbourne game. It was up and down and, very, very exciting.
Just on that too, we interviewed Lachie Neale yesterday on Preview, and we were asking what actually, you know, in practical terms, what is the change in style? Because it's easy to say, oh, they're backing their players more or whatever. But he was talking about the waves of overlap run coming through the corridor. That wasn't happening. Have you observed that?
Yeah. Look, and
so Ross was free to do that at any time in the preceding 3 years,
absolutely.
Wasn't
it? Absolutely.
So why?
Well, I think you'll find for those you know, who sort of get the opportunity to speak to some of the coaches, I think Ross is actually enjoying what he's doing now because he's just got to the stage where he sort of said, I'm just coaching our boys now.
Yeah.
I'm not worrying, not putting anywhere near the time. And
so too much focus on the opposition.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And he's just sort of gone completely the other way. So
it's an interesting story with him too, because we know how last year they tried to open up, got blown away defensively, and went and that was player driven. You would have heard this. The players went to him and said, "We can't play that." Well, the story this time was that he wanted to make, you know, a lot of changes after the first game, and the same senior players went to him and said, "Give those guys another chance." And I reckon maybe even Ross himself would concede this. One of his Achilles heels is perhaps he becomes too emotionally wedded to his senior players.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely fair. Just while I'm on it, we normally do coaches' votes on a Monday, but obviously the we've got a game to go. So the guys that I'm looking at in the positives at the moment, Ross Lyon, Alan Richardson, Brad Scott, I still have got him up there, even though they got beaten in the game. Damien Hardwick, Don Pike are around the better ones, the ones who will get a little cross next to their name at the moment. Bucks, Simon Goodwin, John Worsfold, Chris Fagan. I just didn't think they competed anywhere near what they needed to at home. So they're the ones that are sort of in the bin a little bit for this week. But we'll put them up on social media after we finish today's game.
In the bin, I like that. That's a good social media phrase, along with get in the sea. Try that one time. All right, we're going to whip through a couple more before we get to our final break. Mel in Malvern wants to talk about Nick Riewoldt.
Oh, well, it's not so much. I'm a typical depressed Collingwood supporter, and at the end of the day, it's our home game, and we're playing at Etihad, which I still don't understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, if MCG sitting there would do nothing with seagulls sitting there in the stands, and we're at this crappy ground, which we never play well at.
Spot on, Mel.
I watched the game yesterday, and I thought to myself, what a great job Ben Reid was doing on Riewoldt. And then I looked at the stats. He didn't even get a possession in the second quarter. Not even a touch, right? And then in the Sun voters give him 2 votes, the second best on ground.
Thought he was very, and that sometimes happens. I mean, it was the same as Lachie Neale. You have a look at what he had done up until half time, and then sort of see what he did. But what he did actually influenced the flow of the game, and changed the way that the game was played. So I can understand where you're coming from, but I can also understand where they're coming from in the votes. Just want to pick up on your other point, Mel. I've got a real issue with non-Etihad teams at needing to play. Like, they've got to play 2 games there, understand that, got no issue with that. But why they have to give away advantage to Etihad teams, so Collingwood playing either a Bulldogs or a North Melbourne in their home game, going to Etihad Stadium. The interstate sides have got a distinct home advantage. We water down our home advantage for the Victorian sides anyway because everyone plays more often at the MCG, et cetera, et cetera. But it shouldn't be watered down even more by non-Etihad teams playing Etihad
teams. It's a fair point. Their counter-argument would be is that they're at a disadvantage in terms of travel, particularly the Perth teams, the amount of travel they do versus us. Maybe the two things square each other off, but it's like apples and oranges in a way, isn't it?
But if you win 90% of your home games and they've got a distinct home ground advantage, you're going to play finals.
Yeah.
You're going to play finals. So it doesn't, you know, you only need to win 20% on the road. They should be playing Fremantle or sides like that. So, for example, that game, the Saturday game, should have been Melbourne's one of 2 games that they've got to play at Etihad Stadium. Play Freo there.
Yeah.
And at least it's still an advantage because you're still playing against a side that's, you know, travelling.
Good point. We're going to get to our final break now. 5 minutes to midday. You're on 11:16 SEN. Terry Wallace here for the Lobster Cave and Eco Garage Doors.
On 11:16 SEN, mornings with Rowan Connolly. For iPrimus, unlimited broadband and NBN plans for all of us. Call 131 101 and Mercedes-Benz Brighton. Think Mercedes-Benz, think Mercedes-Benz Brighton.
All right, they said go out with a bang, and there it is. That is Familiar Territory by one of the greatest bands Australia's ever produced, The Mark of Cain, one of Plough's favourites. 2 minutes to midday. We've just got to wrap it up here. Very quickly, he's been hanging on forever. Let's go out to Q and Adrian. Make it quick, Adrian. How are you?
How you going, guys? Just a very quick one. I think Collingwood's got a good young list, but the biggest problem they've got is a lack of leadership. And when Cloak left last year, I thought they should have gone after Drew Petrie to guide Darcy Moore forward and develop him better.
And the other point is, if you have a look at Collingwood's first nine rounds, considering we finished 12th, it's the most disgraceful draw the AFL's ever given.
Very tough draw. I mean, I was speaking with KB on this show before the season even started and sort of said Nathan was going to be under a lot of pressure because of how difficult the draw was. I'm not convinced by a good young list. I think you've got a good list of young midfielders and outside runners. I'm not sure that the spine is anywhere near where it needs to be.
And leadership. They do strike me as a fairly insular group.
Yeah.
There's not too many extroverted types there, is there?
Just one thing that I think you'll find is right down there this week was that they had the flu. And they won't, they won't use it as an excuse.
Yeah,
the flu went right through the place. I think you might find that Pendlebury spent a little bit extra time on the fence and people were complaining about that because he wasn't well. So that never gets factored in.
Well, you can't be seen to make that excuse.
Correct. But I think you'll find Magpie fans that that might have had a bit of an impact. And that's not taking anything away from St Kilda because Collingwood took it up to the Saints early.
Yeah.
I thought they looked the better side early and the Saints, you know, did a number on them.
Great work, player. It's been a lot of fun. Hopefully we can do that again. Stick with us here. We're coming up. We're heading to the MCG. Massive game for the Hawks and the Cats. Coming up, footy preview with Hutto, Robbo, Dermo, and the team at the MCG. Thanks for sticking around with me today and on Good Friday. It's been fun. Hope we can do it again sometime.